Welcome to another Elite Edition of Jawbone, and we will continue our presidential series with a president that I think most... Now, Rob, you represent the average American, do you know who John Adams is?
Of course I know who John Adams is. I've been in 1776 on
stage. Sit down, Rob! Yeah, exactly. Sit down, Rob!
Yes, I do know who that is.
Do you think this is where we were talking about this before. I discovered the actor that played John Adams, Paul Giamatti.
Yes,
John discovered
him in a major Hollywood production.
Yeah, and I discovered Tom Brady. So there's a separate podcast.
Discovered
another day.
Okay.
But Adams, I think up until it was a Dave McCullough book.
Yes.
Which is good.
Yep.
And the HBO documentary miniseries was good.
Yep.
Paul Giamatti won all sorts of awards for it. So when I think of John Adams, I think of Pig Vomit. For those that reference, they'll remember what movie he was in. But I was thinking Adams is kind of hard to rank because what's it like for a historical figure that follows like an all-time great?
Yeah, he can't win. There's nowhere to go but down.
Well, you know, during the actual writing of the Declaration of Independence, he was really like in a lot of people's faces about making it happen.
So again, this is Adams. Absolutely, his best moments are before he becomes president. It's no question.
Right.
There's nothing in his I'd say with one exception, there's nothing in his presidency that's even close to what he did during the Revolution. And that's a problem with ranking him. Do I think the average American knows who he is? I think they know
in relation to Washington, though.
But I think they know the name.
Do they know where he's from? Probably not.
I think they know the name.
Only the ones that have seen 1776 on stage, they might know where he's from.
And the HBO show.
I would say people know the name. They know he is a president or he did something in the Revolution, but I think the average person beyond on that, I don't know.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about John Adams, and I will read a quote. This is not an effective communication. But I found this quote to be funny. This is from a American Revolutionary historian, not Craig Smith. He wrote, Adams was ridiculously vain, absurdly jealous, embarrassingly hungry for compliments, but no man ever served his country more selfishly. Selflessly, I have trouble saying.
And who said that, John?
Edmund Morgan.
I know him.
I don't even know who. I know he's a historian. So, but I think that's a good quote, and that basically sums up a lot of I know of Adams. He has some people that didn't like him, but all viewed him as a hardworking, kind of honest broker.
Well, I think people like that are a catalyst for change. So you have to have somebody that's driving from some place within them is driving things forward. And I think that Adams probably served as one of the number one drivers of that.
Yeah. I think he's better suited to be number two than, say, Thomas Jefferson, who we'll talk about in a couple
I think he struggles from the leadership perspective because he struggles in the likability. He has people that just don't like him. Again, you know, Rob, what's the line? He's you're obnoxious and unliked.
Yeah.
You know,
ugly?
Well, he is.
When you look, we'll talk about his portrait at the end. Yeah. But he lacks the physical prowess, stature.
Yes.
A lot. He's not as involved. War fighting, we'll get to.
Yep.
But is he one of our great diplomats?
Well, you know, squeakiest wheel gets the grease, right? So that's what I kind of feel like John Adams was. He was the squeakiest wheel gets the grease.
I thought he said something else
constantly talking about it.
I thought he said the smokiest wheel gets the grease.
No, I said the squeakiest. Man, wake up.
Come on, man. All right. So Craig, I don't know when I'll start talking more because, like, this is all your era.
Again, this is where you could talk about Paul Giamatti. I think you're right, and he has been difficult to rate. So we were looking at the all-time ratings.
He's
never been higher than 9.
Yeah, his highest ranking was 9, and that was in 1982. Oh, and then in 1948 he was 9. His lowest, I think, was 19. In 2017, which I'm like, as you'll see in presidential polls, like when I'm actually kind of surprised when the documentary, the miniseries.
It's real to you, John.
It was real to me. Came out in 08. His ranking actually went down from 13 to 17.
That I'm actually
I thought
surprised.
It would go
I'm surprised
like,
at that. I don't think I'm really surprised about that because the more information people had, the better they could rate him.
But he comes off pretty good in the documentary.
Yeah, yeah. And then in McCullough's one of the great writers, so.
You want to hear my conspiracy theory?
Oh boy.
Because David McCullough is viewed as America's historian, but he's not a PhD academic historian. He's not. So because of that, Adams has a bad rap with the academic community.
Wait, hold on. McCullough, though, didn't he write Johnstown Flood?
Yeah.
I thought that was a PhD dissertation.
Was it? I don't know. But he's a pop historian.
No, but he became one. But the dude is one of the great writers.
I agree with you, but
the elitist right here.
I agree with you, but...
I think there's part of that.
But I think it's sort of... This is where you have the difference between pop and academic, and most of these ratings are done more on the academic side. Yeah.
And then the general public, I think you're right, Rob. They know of Adams. They just don't know anything else.
Yeah. So
and they know him in relation because he was after G-Dub.
He's got his names in there, but he's never number one on the list.
All right. So, Craig, introduce us to young John Adams. Where's he from?
Okay. He's from Massachusetts.
Braintree?
He is. He's famous He's famous for antics in and around Boston. He's from Braintree.
He's a big Red Sox fan.
Yes, maybe. Who knows? He might have been, or he could have been like
sports is my field. Yeah, Craig.
But I'm thinking about him. Would he have liked sports at all? Would he have been like, I don't care for the sports ball. there's Mayor Quimby.
I was going to say, Mayor Quimby comes out a lot.
So his greatest hits are in and around Boston, and his family home later is going to be in Quincy, Massachusetts.
We'll talk about his wife because she gets a lot of publicity, I think, too.
She does.
We didn't talk about Washington's wife really at all. Martha.
You did a little bit.
Yeah, I mentioned her. All right. So Adams, I will give you my interpretation.
Sure.
He is not a radical revolutionary type as opposed to, and we'll see that when the French Rev, as opposed to Jefferson, who's a little more, got more grandiose ideas.
Yeah, he's not even a radical in relation to his cousin Samuel Adams at the start of the Revolution. So he absolutely is a revolutionary, but he's more tempered. Fair.
Yeah, and... I will say like that. I'm trying to think, when does he first achieve some national attention? Is defense of the Boston Massacre.
Yes, where he...
So tell us more, Craig, about...
He's Harvard educated.
He's a Harvard man.
He is a Harvard man. His father wants him to be a minister. He just wants to be a farmer, and his father tells him, too bad.
Everyone wants to grow cabbages.
So he ends up becoming a lawyer. He's famous. That's where he really makes a name for himself. Now, a lot of people interpret that. Why would he defend the British soldiers? Again, it was very much viewed as they had to be given a legitimate defense or else it would be viewed as like this show sham trial. They wanted actual justice. And there's actually a lot of the leading sort of Sons of Liberty figures actually want a fair trial for them. So he's not like, you know, he's not worried about his safety or anything like that.
But he's, tell me again, I'm wrong. It seems even if you don't like him politically, you don't like him much personally, he's always been like, he's an honest dude. He'll do the right thing.
Yes.
He's not going to go one way versus the other and they'll get a fair shot.
He's got his interpretation.
Good man, this Charlie
Brown. But he is an honest, dutiful.
Boring.
Yes.
Nerd, competent.
Nerdy, bookish. Vain individual.
So tell us about his wife, because she's kind of some renown.
Yeah, Abigail Adams.
I think she'll be, bold statement here. Third most well-known first lady?
She's easily.
Possibly. Easily.
So I think Dolly Madison is in that list.
I'd say Jackie's
probably one.
Probably one.
That's also kind of, you could say recency. And then yeah. I would think she's third.
So
she said somewhere
Lady,
in the top.
Lady Adams.
So Jefferson's wife and is also based on the musical. So if you have the musical.
Yeah, but that's before he's president and she's dead by then.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
Sally Hemings? Is that what we're talking about?
Oh, wow.
That's next episode. Or next.
So, but yeah, she's easily a top three first lady. I mean, you could put her anywhere in there.
And in the documentary to me, the Paul Giamatti movie, she plays a big role, probably based on what I was reading. Adams is kind of away from his family a lot.
Well, during the revolution, he absolutely is, because he's ambassador.
He's not fighting.
He's in Philadelphia with the Congress. Then he's ambassador to France and the Netherlands. He is not a man suited for European diplomacy. Certainly not in France. Well, not speaking French will do that.
He's not Ben Franklin.
John Adams had a very quiet social life at Harvard, was not a ladies' man, whereas Ben Franklin was very much a ladies' man.
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. There is no allegedly about that.
How many Franklin descendants are there around?
He was all over the place on purpose.
So, he seems like he wouldn't be quite as much fun to hang out with.
Yeah, so his big thing is during, obviously, the Boston Massacre trial, where he gets them off the murder charges. Again, some of the enlisted get lower sentences of manslaughter, but he's basically successful. And it also gives credence to, look, this is, the Americans are holding to certain ideals.
Justice, law.
He becomes, obviously, a key figure in the Continental Congress and one of the leading voices for independence. Rob, do you want to sing vote yes? John doesn't get any of these references.
No.
So much so that they even reference it in the musical to say that the opening number is telling him to sit down, John, for God's sake, John, sit down.
So he's
talking so much in
very
the, about
much
it.
Becoming the speaking out for what is initially viewed as the cause of the revolution, which is at first the cause of Boston, then the cause of Massachusetts, then the cause of New England, and ultimately the cause of America. So he's a leading figure in the Continental Congress. He's one of the individuals that's behind getting Washington named commander in chief. So he's not just some random name on the Declaration of Independence. He helps work on, he's part of the Declaration Committee. He's crucial. If you're saying,
I also think he probably realistically doesn't think that he can become the president of the United States. So no. I think he probably takes some.
That's not what my quote would lead itself to believe.
So here's Adams. So Adams is another one that loves ratings.
Winning the presidency is what I'm saying.
So Adams loves ratings. And when old man Adams, like reflecting back, he's doing his own rankings of who he thinks are the most important people of the revolution.
Right.
He acknowledges Washington will be one.
Yeah, it's kind of hard.
He acknowledges it, but he thinks he should be number two.
Right. What I'm saying is to win it from Washington. I wasn't talking about him because he becomes president. I'm saying that to win it from Washington at the time, he doesn't have the popularity.
Yeah, but I'm just saying that he views.
Why am I spoiling him?
He views himself as one of the big four figures.
We don't know if he's going to be president yet.
You'd argue he views himself.
Oh my God, spoiler!
I'll say
the iceberg didn't happen either.
I will go on a limb and say he views himself as being the second most important figure.
Wait, we'll talk about that when we're done with all the founders, because I think Craig knows who I think is the second most important.
Yeah, that's. All right, so he does that. Ambassador. He gets lots of fights with Ben Franklin. Gets sent to the Netherlands. He is able to negotiate a loan, which technically shows a recognition of the United States. He's going to work on the Treaty of Paris, which ends the war. So he's doing
well.
Involved in the writing of the Massachusetts Constitution. Huge. This is tough to beat.
Yeah, he's doing a lot of the harder jobs, the less glamorous jobs. He's not in the army, winning battles. He's doing the grunt work.
He's a politician. But he's doing a lot of the ideological, intellectual work.
Yeah. Now let's get it up to Washington's presidency. So he becomes our first vice president.
Yes.
He, like, based on my reading, like most vice presidents, was, I don't know what my job really is.
Well, because it really isn't.
And that's purposeful. Really,
yes.
Just to wait around until something happens and, so you could step
Craig,
in.
Craig, tell me if I'm wrong, but he was not a Washington didn't ask for a lot of his advice until kind of towards the end, but that was because Hamilton, Jefferson, Madison are all feuding.
So he is largely left in obscurity. And that's why, you know, in the Hamilton musical, the joke is John Adams does, this line is what, John Adams spends the summer with his family, and then Hamilton's reply is John Adams doesn't have a real job anyway, because he's really just waiting around. There's no official role for him. He doesn't necessarily, he's not necessarily on the best terms with the members of the cabinet. So what are some of his contributions as vice president? He tries to come up with really lofty sounding names for the U.S. president, to make him on par with the kings and of Europe.
So it makes me wonder, though, so the relationship between Adams and Washington, while that's going on, while the president, he's the vice president, it makes me wonder about why is he trying to get these lofty names? Is it for later in case he becomes it? Or is it based in, does he have a good relationship with Washington at the time? That's what I wonder.
So I think some of it
is... distant but respectful?
Yeah, that's fair. Some of it, I think, has to do with he is, in that interim period, he's been ambassador to the court of St. James, so to Britain, and he's met, you know, George III in, and that's where you get that famous line, you know, John Adams, I know him, that can't be, that whole bit. It's, he understands what you, that you need a bit of flair to,
he needs more badges.
You do. You need to do it up a bit to be respected amongst Europe. So could there be ulterior motives?
Maybe. Do they all sing during this period or no?
Yes, every single one of them. Nonstop musical.
Yeah. Okay. Gotcha.
It's awful.
But yeah, so he wants titles like his elected majesty, his democratic mightiness.
Oh, that's a good one. I haven't heard that one.
And so he gets accused, again, also he's a very strong Federalist.
He's a royalist at heart, isn't he?
Yes, Greg? That is what he gets accused of. He gets accused of being a monarchist, and then we're going to see that come up again in his presidency. But there is one title that he is given, and we can talk about it later when we get to his portrait. Should we save it for his portrait?
Yeah, save it for the portrait.
Okay, we'll save it for his portrait.
All right, so we'll get to his election, and I'm looking at the electoral map, the famous... Actually, it's really not, because the next election after it will kind of take over. This is the election of 1796. Now, Craig, let me ask you this. It's vastly different than the first two.
Yes.
But is this, would you consider this a modern election?
This, yet? It's more...
You have parties.
You have parties, but not, it's not a full-on partisan system like it will become. So it's more similar, I would say it's not exactly like the first two, but it's more similar to the first two than 1800, which I would argue 1800 yeah. is in many ways indistinguishable from a modern election.
Who else is running?
So he is, again, still standing.
Standing, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Standing.
He's up against his old friend turned bitter enemy. You, Rob. Thomas Jefferson.
Thomas Jefferson.
Now, Thomas Jefferson, is he going around saying, I'm a Democratic Republican and John Adams is an evil Federalist?
So we haven't gone to the full vilification.
But it's getting there.
Yeah, the full-on like claims that your opponent is like the devil incarnate or the like literally dead or something like that, necromancer or whatever you want to say about them.
And they have running mates now.
Again, but the votes are still the same. It's whoever gets the most votes is president. Whoever gets second most votes is vice president. So, what's going to happen, John, when you have two popular figures, again, on very different, you know, ideological spectrums, but two very popular, well-known figures, who's going to get the one and two votes?
Yeah.
Is it going to be the people that they envision vice president? No, absolutely not.
That will become a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in this electoral, it's actually The close, it's up to this point, the closest presidential election. Well,
I don't think that Adams and Jefferson were really friends or had, they were,
we'll talk about that at the end.
They were friends, and then they start to have a falling out.
And then they become buddies.
And then they become pen pals in their later life.
Right. As they were, yeah.
All right. So this one, Adams will win the election.
Yep.
71 votes to 68.
It's tight.
And you can see the beginning of sectionalism, regionalism. Jefferson's votes are almost all in, not south of the Mason-Dixon line because he wins Pennsylvania, but it's pretty southern, while Adams is going to win all of the New England northerner votes, with Maryland
and a few random electors.
Yeah, we'll change. So in this vote, we have roughly 65,000 Americans voting. So that's a big increase. So you're seeing more people are voting, but there's also just more people.
Yeah,
more states are being added. More, but it's a pretty close election.
But again,
Adams wins.
This is what you're starting to see. What Washington warned about in the farewell address: the partisanship, the sectionalism. You are seeing it here. And this is, you could say it's very similar to electoral college maps where you know, in more of the modern era, where you know certain parties are going to win certain states.
Yep. And you're seeing it, we'll talk again the next, when we do Jefferson's.
Are there swing states at this time we're too early?
It's there are certain states that where you could have split votes, but it's largely going to be what is the character, what is the economics, the industry, agricultural versus trade versus...
Right. Our guy, your guy is like very like... Okay.
So it's also, last thing on note, I think it's interesting because this will play a part because when does it... I think it's changes with FDR. Presidents don't take the oath of office till March. So there's a bigger lame... duckish era.
Yeah,
during the Great Depression.
Yeah, I forget the exact date, but...
So it's not January yet. That's more of a modern thing. Now, Craig, is this true?
I think it's March.
It is March.
Yeah.
Does he spend most of his time as president at his home?
He's in Quincy a lot. So John Adams is golfing. Well, John Adams is the first president to move into the White House.
But towards the, like, what?
Towards the later portions. Yeah. But he's the first president to move into
It's not yet the White House, though, either.
Well,
don't spoil
the presidential residence, mansion, whatever you want to call it, right?
It's still not Washington, D.C. yet, correct?
So it's Washington, D.C. No, Washington, D.C. is being developed. Yeah. This planning for it is under Washington. But yeah, he spends a lot of time in Quincy, which does create some logistical issues when you're trying to lead, and it takes a week or more to get a letter from the Capitol to, Quincy.
What? So what's the reason he just was like, I don't want to move?
Look at Harry Truman, spending time in Missouri, and he likes Quincy. It's also, D.C. is a swamp.
Yeah, I get the health reasons. D.C.
That, and there's no, like, there's a distance between where the Congress is and where the White House is.
Yeah, but he's going to get, like, malaria. He's old.
Yeah.
We'll talk about his portrait, his physique.
It's not the best place
to live. No, I understand. I just didn't realize he was there as much as he was.
Is Congress still in Philadelphia at this point? Or?
Yeah, everyone's starting to make the trip again. So they start off in Philly and then making the transition. So, what were we even talking about?
Well, let's talk about his actual now presidency. So he's a one-termer.
He is.
So he's not going to get,
no bonus.
I don't want to spoil it.
No bonus points.
Now his presidency though, there's some, he's got some controversies.
Yes, so Washington, again, this is product of Adams is not Washington. Washington, even when there's controversy, is able, he's sort of Teflon like you, John, where he can sort of escape.
When people throw punches at me, they miss and hit Greg. So it works.
There's some controversy here. Again, it's a lot of the same issues that were lingering under Washington, but they bubble up and John Adams cannot contain them. And in some respects, it's really based off of things.
So,
consequences of the Washington.
Is that, are you then saying that Washington just didn't act on them?
No, I'm saying.
And was like that, the next guy worried.
No,
about
I'm
it.
Saying.
I might have to change my grades.
He did act on them, but John Adams was unable to manage these same tensions in the same way. So, a lot of his biggest issues are dealing with foreign policy.
And again, it's mainly French, British. Yes. Who should we ally with? Yes. Which role should we play in the Rev?
But
the French Revolution.
But where it gets really interesting is that that foreign policy has domestic impact. And that's where he takes the biggest hit. So we're talking largely about the tension between Britain and France. By this point, you're starting to have nations mess with American shipping. Because Britain and France are at war. So if you're trading, you know, America say we're neutral. The other side is going to say, hey, you're trading with the enemy. We're going to grab your ships. We're going to grab
Which is American tradition. We will. This will be a theme throughout the presidency series.
So we'll still... Well,
and also this is it's Adams' presidency where Napoleon begins to seize the reins of France and begins to dominate.
So this things have gotten more heated with the obviously the Treaty of Neutrality, but the Jay Treaty in 1794-95, which has basically normalized relations between the British and the Americans. This is under Washington. It's resumed trade, given the U.S. most favored nation status. But for many, particularly in the sort of Democratic Republican leanings, anti-federalist leanings, why on earth are you making peace, normalizing relations with our enemy, Britain? But Adams and the Federalists have always viewed themselves as, because they were, more culturally British.
We're cousins.
So the French, obviously, this becomes a problem. And they start to interfere with American shipping.
This is where impressment begins.
Yes. And again, impressment is not just a British thing.
Yep.
It's done by the French. It's done by the British. And so they're interfering with shipping. And Adams is going to send a diplomatic coalition to talk to the new French government, which is under the Directory. Again, we'll be here till next year
if
we go through all the governments. He's very wary of the French, unlike someone like Thomas Jefferson, who is his vice
president. Who loves
the
French.
Like, you know, who's more, you know, viewed as more French than American.
Yeah.
And during these negotiations, the French, through intermediaries, who get nicknamed W, X, Y, and Z.
This is the XYZ affair.
The XYZ affair. They basically ask for bribes and favors and apologies to even let them have negotiations, even to open up discussions. You got to pay them under the table. You got to give us low interest loans, and you got to apologize for all sorts.
Which was not abnormal for the era.
Again, it is not abnormal, but for a nation that is trying to be viewed as an equal among other nations and is viewing itself as holding some lofty ideals, it's viewed as a disgrace.
Yep.
So when this ultimately gets published, it really amps up into what comes to be known as the Quasi-War. So there is, in effect, an
war. This is war fighting.
Yes, this is absolutely his war
fighting. And this is a naval.
This is an undeclared.
Rob Quasi means kind of.
Yeah. So it is a, it is an undeclared naval war.
You're funny.
So is it a war there, Dr. Smith? Is this? If a student were to say the Quasi-War is not a war.
You could make the case it was not, but you could also make the case it was. So is there...
This is great. Good analysis.
So
yes and no.
Yes and no. Or it depends what you,
Maybe.
Can back up. So is there fighting? Yes. Is it declared? No. Do the sides recognize this conflict? Yes. And there's all manner of sort of... There is direct fighting, but there's also indirect fighting. So for instance, during this period... There's the French are basically fighting everyone, including their own colonies, particularly in Haiti. So the first American to try to help the Haitians is John Adams.
So they're both start was a John, the last one to fail was a John. So it all so it from, all goes full
from
circle.
John Adams to John Manza.
Yeah, it's all perfect.
But
So did you want to talk? Because I mean, it's in the news. Then this is the Don't Get Fired podcast, but. Alien Sedition Acts, which we were all this is in a big cauldron going on.
It's all bubbling.
It's French, the British, and it's about immigration.
Yes, absolutely. And there's a real fear of a French fifth column, sleeper French agents that are going to pop
up. Still one of my fears.
In a neighborhood near you, and then like And there's a long-term American fear of the French, but the idea that that there are French agents that are like have secret guillotines in their basements that they're going to put up next to your American flag.
Yeah, everyone has if you're French, you have a mobile guillotine.
This is a real thing. So this is a really controversial. It's controversial at the time. So we like to on the show make fun of historians who impose modern.
Which is most modern at this point.
Modern morals on the past. Yeah. This is controversial at the time. There's the Alien and Sedition Acts, which basically says that if an immigrant speaks against the government or engages in any number of a variety of activities, they can be declared an enemy and removed.
Yep.
That is controversial, but the more controversial part is the Sedition Act, which can be used on Americans. It's more nuanced, and it says about if you actively engage in certain activities, but more specifically, if you speak knowingly false against the government. And so there's the idea of knowingly false. So not if you accidentally do it, but like intentionally. But then this runs into conflict with the Bill of Rights, which was a very key component of the Constitution being
what got it to pass.
Yes, being ratified. So I'm going to go out on a limb and say Adams gets a bad rap because it's an act, meaning what had to happen?
They had to vote.
Yeah, so it had to go through Congress. Adams, you know, and then it has to be signed. So is Adams a part of this? Absolutely, he is. But a lot of it gets put on, this is, you know, John Adams alone. And there's...
Well, he's the buck stops here, correct?
Yeah, he's the president of the United States.
But again, so this is not John Adams completely in a vacuum.
Or what do you want to call himself? What was that again?
We don't want to speak about, you know, we're not to get into modern presidencies, but you saw a similar debate after sort of 9/11 with the Patriot Act.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where it was, look, there is a view of a legitimate threat. We have to do something.
Yeah. You know, I think that's, and we'll talk about like presidential greatness. Not all presidents can be great because there's got to be some event, something. Not all of them get.
But he does.
So, but you're apologizing. You're trying to revise your revisionist John Adams.
I'm saying that John Adams deserves, whatever you think of those acts, John Adams was part of it, but he's not the only one.
So you're justifying your vote before we even vote?
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Now,
But what he is going to get out of this, he's ultimately going to get secure peace. He's going to get, you know, recognition. He's going to get, you know, lasting friendly relations with France.
Did we win the quasi-war?
No one really wins. There's a treaty.
War fighting grades going down.
The problem is the treaty comes out right before the election. So it's signed in, I think October 1800. So news doesn't get back.
Yeah, so it's like a month or two before the election.
It doesn't get back. It has no real effect. So he is largely successful, but no one, it doesn't help him. But I'm going to argue he actually does have some other war fighting elements, which is surprising considering he has really no military.
Yeah, he's none. He's one of the Jefferson to some extent too is the same case.
So there's a couple of things, and some of them are dicey. So before we get to portraits,
let's start there. All right. So let's rank then. Well, let's finish up. All right, so he leaves, he loses.
No. I got two things I want to get into. All right. So he is
becoming George Washington podcast.
He's responsible for creating the Department of the Navy.
Okay.
And expanding the army to, I think, like 50 or so thousand. But he's really afraid of the army.
But that's not strategic warfighting. That's actually, he created something as a deterrent.
He was worried about the French.
Right.
But he purposely...
As we should be.
He purposely very much is giving preference to the Navy because, like the British mindset, this is protecting and this is helping commerce. This is doing some...
But it's not warfighting.
He's a disciple of Mahan already.
it's that New England influence.
Yeah.
But he does wear, again, this is a contested issue.
So this is historically debated.
Historically debated that he does.
Breaking news here.
It is said he wears a military uniform while he gives speeches during the Quasi War. Military uniform with sword.
Now, is there any what? This may be too nerdy history, but what's the evidence to support this? There's not a picture.
There's not
a portrait.
So this is where it gets tricky. There are a couple of modern articles that were written that reference this, and it's referenced to like earlier newspaper articles about these speeches, but I have yet to see the specific.
There's not a definitive.
I have never
all right,
seen.
So let's not. That doesn't.
So are you saying then? So wait, final. Did it happen?
I would lean. I have not seen convincing evidence. I'm not going to say no, but I have not seen.
So for this rating, we're going to.
I'm saying no.
I don't even know why we missed it.
Yeah.
So let's move.
For the guy that always wants students to have an argument or a thesis, he doesn't have one a lot.
That's exactly right.
Shaking my head. All right. What was that? Was that it? What you wanted is. We got it. So
and then continues with the Washington press. We'll talk about this in eliteness. So
let's yeah, no. So like here's we'll wrap up his life real quick. He actually lives for fairly forever.
Yes.
He was the longest living until Reagan, and then that was broken by.
When does he die?
Carter. July 4th.
He does.
1826.
On the anniversary.
Yeah, we'll get to that. So, but he's one of the few early presidents that has
same lives. As somebody else, right?
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. He lives like 25 years after he leaves the White House.
And that's a good best friend. You both go out at the same time. But we'll
debate the last words.
Yeah, so he's around a lot. Mm-hmm. Put a little, you also too, he has a couple kids. Most of them don't end up all right. His one kid just throws himself off of a ship, supposedly.
Again, he's a good founding father, but maybe
not a good father.
Not a good father.
But his one son, and I don't want to spoil the podcast, will have his own episode.
Yeah. He will.
So yes. His one son did all right. The rest of them, not so great.
No, it's also he shipped them off at age like two.
Yeah, toxic father, so like leadership.
Let's vote.
Well, then he dies in his famous last words. So he's 90 years old, and this is July 4th. His last words were, Thomas Jefferson survives. Now, do you debate this? None of us were there.
So
Rob may have been. He was eight.
The bigger question is, TJ dies on the same day. So was he still?
Jefferson died before,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, I forgot.
Now, I'm a skeptic of all last words, because what do your last words tend to be?
Yeah.
You're like,
most are
screaming because something's coming at you
It's also all those early presidents like to die in the 4th of July. So
did he, are you debating, wait, no, hold on. Are you debating that he did not die?
No, I think they do, but there are actually temps when we get, I think, to Monroe that literally keep him alive with like drugs and like prop him up to get him to.
Or live. Like, hey, he died on the July 3rd, 11:26 p.m. 12:01. All right, so. That's Adams. Lives a very long, cranky life.
Gets crankier the older he gets.
But let's go. Let's start again. Strategic leadership. What do you? And Craig, you can go first since this is your wheelhouse. I have a rough idea where I want to go. Success.
I'm going to say he's probably a 6.
All right, I was going to go 5. So I'll go 5. So that's 11. So divide that by 2, 5.5. War fighting. This is where he's probably going to... Shouldn't be a 0.
No, it's not a 0.
But it's not going to be... We gave Washington an 8 and a 9, respectively.
Yeah.
Or no, sorry, I gave him a 6.
So it's this is where you go into the whole dime element of war fighting for his earlier years.
Yeah, right? There wasn't any.
Well, it doesn't...
Pre-presidentially did nothing.
Well, he's negotiating alliances and loans. And
I want
war fighting.
Tactical.
Okay. Then outside of his role during the quasi-war as commander-in-chief, it's not really, but he is instrumental in developing the Department of the Navy.
True, that's a good point.
So,
I'll give him a...
And also expanding the army. So
what are you giving him?
3, 4.
All right, you give him a 3, I give him a 2.
You always give him one lesson, Craig.
Well, we'll see. When we get more modern, I'll probably start doing it. No, but I'm not trying to dislowball you. I'm going to start writing them down that you won't accuse me of things. Now, his eliteness, greatness level.
The problem is he can't match Washington.
Now,
what I will say, the one thing he does not get credit for that he absolutely should, he continues the Washington tradition of peaceful transition of power, especially during a highly contested election that almost led to civil war.
Yeah.
And to a member of the other party that he was not happy about. So I think he does absolutely deserve more credit for that. And you could say there's a certain element of greatness to that.
Yeah, I agree.
And there's certainly an element of greatness before them. But if you're saying, is anyone going to view Adams as a great president? I think no.
No.
And the easiest way to look at it, he does not have a memorial, despite the Adams Memorial Commission.
He has a library.
So does everyone.
I know. All right, so what's your number then? I went with a 4.
I'd go a 5.
All right. See?
Again, and I'm saying that strictly as president.
All right. So that's 9. So that's 4.5. All right. So he's coming in quite lower than G-Dub.
Well, did Portrait yet, right?
No, we have effective communications. Does he...
Again,
I had a good quote about him, but I don't have any...
So...
He doesn't have an... There's no great farewell address.
Everyone will point to his inaugural address, but there's... outside of, let's say, his speaking in the Constitutional Convention or the Boston Massacre, there's not a singular thing, like, spoken speech where you're like, that's
Adam. So he's not Jefferson.
But where
he's not Madison, he's not Hamilton.
But where he is reflected are in the founding documents, both for the U.S. and for Massachusetts. So for that, I'm going to give him... an 8.
No, what?
Oh, sorry.
1 out of 5.
I'll give him, you know what? I'm going to give him a 5. I'm going to be generous.
What?
A 5?
I'm going to give him a 5 because he was instrumental.
Hey, you just said he had no, nothing right, out there.
I gave him a 2.
Fine. 4.
Give 4. Him a 4. All right. So that's, hold on. Got to do maths. Making sure I did this right. 6, that's 3. All right, Portrait, let's look.
Yeah. So.
I'm not giving him a good grade score.
So
he's below 6 feet.
Yes.
Also, all right, so he's much younger looking in this portrait.
Well, do you know what it makes me feel like? Like he had somebody who's like, he didn't like that he had wrinkles and all that stuff, so he had, yes. you gotta erase all my wrinkles.
So he's younger than you picture him.
Yeah. He had a good skincare routine.
Yeah, well.
He's got a little bit of receding hairline, it looks like.
Yeah, but that looks like that. He said he looked at it and said, "I don't like the painting. Take out my wrinkles."
He's got a big forehead.
Ye old Photoshop.
Paint over my ye old Photoshop. That's what it is.
He looks a little soft.
So I off mic, you called him a nerd.
Yeah, he's a nerd.
The one thing, so he did pick up.
No wonder he yelled in Congress.
He did pick up one nickname during his presidency, aside from like things like King John for his sort of supposed monarchical ways. But there's one, and it had to do, it's body shaming John. He was nicknamed his rotundity.
That actually makes me like him more. Yeah, in this photo though, it looks like so the Washington one, it's a full size photo. This is kind of like chest up.
Well, you wonder why. And why do the Marines do full body?
Yeah, that's where's John Monza's ghost whispering, chubby.
So what?
I do like the shirt though, or the jacket.
It's very it's a frilly, puffy shirt.
I know. I think I might wear that in the Pacific sometime.
So the one thing that's interesting, there's a 1798 portrait that comes out during the Quasi War, where they literally just copy and paste, put his head on like a Washingtonian pose with like a sword.
Yeah, it's like what they did with Roman emperors. Just put it on this statue.
So this is a very different than Washington, but there have been earlier times.
Yeah, and the background is just kind of nothing.
It's like
he's in limbo.
It's like when you went to JCPenney for your Christmas portrait.
That's right. Yeah, I'm going to admit, it's not it does not elicit. Like, I'm like, this is a great leader.
It looks more like he'd be a dean at Harvard.
Yeah, that's it. So I'm going to give him a 2 on that.
I'm with you.
So that would be a 2.
An average of a 2.
Yep.
Just so you know.
So let me, Rob, we're historians. I have a calculator. So let me combine.
You had to use a calculator for that.
No, not that one, but all of them together. So that brings us, wow. 17.5 out of 41.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
He just tanked.
So just so you know, Washington was 35.5 out of 41. So, John Adams, we apologize to your descendants. Paul Giamatti, you were great. If it was, we were ranking Paul Giamatti, he'd be a lot higher. He'd be like at least in the 20s.
Yeah.
Well, he's one of the, you could argue he is perhaps the greatest portrayal of a president. Yeah.
Without any kind of real reference.
Well, we also talk about Washington doesn't, there's no like great Washington movie.
Yeah, but there's but Paul Giamatti is Paul Giamatti. He has that presence, so you can't really, and we don't know exactly how Adams was in person, so there you go.
But I'm trying to think.
But when people think, they see Paul Giamatti in a way that...
It's like Patton.
So like for...
I was going to say, just like your reference to Patton from before, an earlier podcast.
But like no one, when people think Jefferson, they don't think Nick Nolte.
Oh, what's his face? In the HBO miniseries on Adams, the dude that played Jefferson was great.
Yeah, but you can't even name him, I bet.
Yeah, but he's a dude. He's on Wikipedia.
Yeah.
But anyways, all right, so there, John Adams, we apologize for all the John Adams fan clubs if you have criticisms.
We think you're a great founder, just not the best
person. Yeah, just not elite, so you don't get the badge of eliteness. But on that note, be elite.